Lunch with Leon is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
So welcome to Lunch with Leon, and here we are. ITT Hub 2021 is over. Several thousand visitors, several hundred exhibitors, and so many people telling us how great it was to be back out there meeting real people and talking about the major issues of the day with the manufacturers, with the data handlers, with the disruptors, and with the energy providers. So all across social media, ITT Hub 2021 is getting an amazing, amazing coverage. And I hope you really enjoyed it. I hope you came. If you weren't able to come, please check out the social media coverage, which has been fantastic. So this is Lunch with Leon. And of course, I have a guest. And my guest this week is Claire Haig from the Greener Transport Council. Claire, of course, has been a champion for greener journeys for many years indeed. And I was really pleased to catch up with her and talk about those things that are really important to us.
Brought to you by ITTHub.net. Check out our news feed for all the latest, plus details of this and all our other podcast features.
So, Claire, I think you and I share the same real worry, is that firstly, there'll be a car-led recovery after COVID. Secondly, we'll be stuck there in lines of traffic with people in their electric cars with a smug smile on their face, just saying to themselves that since they're not causing any environmental damage, they're just entitled to be there. And that somehow this very fast move to net zero will happen at a terrible price, a sort of price for congestion, a price for the exchequer, and we'll all end up at the end of it in a much worse place than we wanted to be. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And the very serious worry, of course, is that we're seeing that the cost of motoring falling, the running cost of motoring with an EV is actually, in fact, there was a really interesting article in the Sunday Times a few weeks ago, which was just exposing the fact that EV car owners are, in fact, making money on charging up their electric cars at really off-peak times, even actually making profit. So far from the running costs in any way reflecting use, we have a situation where you buy an EV, it's almost baked into the price that you're not going to have to pay to use the road, or very little, you know, low running costs are baked in. And that's the opposite of what we need if we're going to encourage switch to a different time of day, to more better use of the roads, you know, more efficient use of the roads. So it's potentially a complete nightmare if we don't do something very quickly.
Yeah, and I was really surprised. The advantage to businesses buying an EV is it's 100% allowable against corporation tax. The benefit in kind as a company car was 0% last year, and it's 1% this year, and it's 2% next year. Compared, I can't remember, benefit in kind, I think, is 37% for an internal combustion engine vehicle. So there's a phenomenal deal to be done to get people to adopt electric vehicles, but it doesn't come with the balance, does it? It doesn't come with the balance to stop people from using their vehicles when they shouldn't do. And I'm just terrified. You know, you and I have spent most of our lives trying to encourage people onto public transport. And in the last few years, some of the most doubters, we just got them over the hill and started thinking about public transport. Now, my goodness, they're all sliding backwards the other way again. And we're going to be inside our own cars, which I think is shocking. But the other one we've got is there's that 40 billion of revenue every year for the Exchequer, which comes from fuel. And that money doesn't just pay for roads, does it? It pays for aircraft carriers and hospitals and schools.
So essentially, yes. I mean, the 40 billion black hole, which is coming, is really what's changed the argument. It's just changed the discussion. And actually, that there has been fear within Treasury for some time that this was coming. But of course, it is now much more of a reality. I mean, we're seeing, as we see more and more EVs being rolled out, this stops being a theoretical fear, a theoretical threat, should we say, to public finances. It's becoming a real threat. So yes, that's the 28 billion on fuel duty. There's the VAT on the fuel, around another 6 billion or so. And then of course there's VED. So currently what's being paid, you know, by petrol and diesel car owners, you know, is just diminishing every year. I think that focuses the mind in a way that probably nothing else quite could. And what we believe really is that it presents the opportunity, a window of opportunity to make a change, because if I may just talk a little bit about what we think we need to do, because we've got this burning deck need now to do something about this fuel duty and loss of revenue. We've also got a kind of a window to do something different, because from clearly, you know, 2030, no sales of new petrol and diesel cars will be banned. And then obviously 2035, all, you know, that's it, including hybrids, etc. So we are moving gradually to changing over the fleet. Now that does actually create an opportunity to have a conversation with the public. Road pricing has been talked about for a long time and it's become a political football. And you don't get many opportunities, really, as you wouldn't get one as good as this, I don't believe, to actually say, well, look, to any fair and reasonable minded person, we have to replace this revenue somehow. And if we don't, if we do nothing, what will happen? I'll tell you what will happen. Road infrastructure will just be paid for out of general taxation. Which, of course, means that non-car owners and car users, people who are very often on low income, will be subsidising people who can afford to run a car. So that's hardly fair. We have to do something. And actually, so this change now in the vehicle technology, this creates something that we have to do something, and anyone could understand that the public finances are going to be shot. We already see that, you know, this is going to be a very difficult few years coming up. We can't afford yet more black holes appearing. Anyone could really understand that, I believe. But also, this is an opportunity to take a step back. How fair is our current way of paying for road use? In fact, we could be taking the opportunity to move to an altogether better, fairer and more equitable way of paying for roads. Now, the question is how we start that conversation, because you and I, Leon, we know that this is true. We know that there is a better way that actually wouldn't. In fact, if you think about it, fuel duty is a very blunt instrument, isn't it? It's hardly fair on low-income households in rural areas with no other access to transport, entirely reliant on perhaps not very fuel-efficient vehicles. So paying a lot of fuel duty, paying the same, that a driver in an urban area where there's plenty of alternatives would be paying. So again, that's not fair either. So, you know, if you think about it, fuel duty, you know, we need to move on from to a fairer system. And actually this is, and I think if we're going to do that, we need to start that conversation, give plenty of warning. That's very important, that you don't drop something on people without them having been warmed up to it.
No, I mean, for me, the obvious way of charging for road space is that it's inversely proportional to how much you're making it worse. So a bit like a meter in a taxi that works backwards. So in fact, if you're causing almost no congestion and almost no pollution, then actually the meter should be going up quite slowly. But if you are in a queue of traffic and you are causing pollution and you're causing delay, then actually that meter ought to go quite quickly, oughtn't it?
Yes, that's a really brilliant way of describing it. Thank you. That's exactly what we would recommend as well. Exactly right. So in actual fact, you have a new way of paying for road use, which does precisely what you're saying. So someone in a rural area setting, which is where we know we have real concerns, equity and access concerns, it would be absolutely in their interest to switch to this different way of paying for road use, where because their external costs are much lower, much less congestion, much less pollution, of course it's fair that they should be paying less. So what we would be proposing would be a replacing fuel duty and VED by a new road user charge based on distance and time. and obviously the time would cover the congestion element, and the distance would cover the infrastructure element. So we've, in our proposal, there are different bands for different range of vehicles. The infrastructure charge for cars will be less than for lorries, obviously, because there's less wear and tear on the roads, etc. But essentially, you start to have a way of paying that reflects much more clearly the impacts, whether it's on the infrastructure, on congestion, the external impacts. And so to come back to what you said at the start, Leon, I love this portraying it this way. And that's the sort of message that I believe people will hear and understand. You know, there are plenty of analogies for that.
So the big problem, of course, is that the super users, who are the ones who are likely to be paying more as a result of their extensive use of the road network and their extensive contribution to congestion, are the ones who are going to make the loudest noise, are they not? Because it will be put forward as a further burden to them personally, or a further burden, for example, to their business. But the right answer for this, of course, is to make sure that it's got a proper plan. In the same way we know from 2030 and 2035 about new vehicles, in the same way that various metro mayors have set deadlines for zero emission, we have to give everybody time to plan where they live, plan how they use their transport, the effect and so on their business. And broadly, what we want is we want the polluter and we want the person causing the congestion to pay, because we want people to think twice about the journey at all. And if they have to make the journey, we want them to think more about the time and the place when they do it. And I think that can be solved. But you and I both know that it's been politically toxic to talk about road user charging. And certainly in all my time in London, every time I opened my mouth to say road user charging, I was told to be quiet and not even utter the words. Because the trouble is, on a 4-year political cycle, it's just toxic, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is precisely the problem. Though, which is why I do think that you don't get many windows of opportunity to have a discussion. Everything you're saying is, I mean, there was a very interesting survey that was done by the RAC about a year or so ago. But, you know, looking at members, and how would they feel about a new way of paying for road use, given that fuel duty and given that those receipts are going to be going down, the Treasury is going to give me a gap in the finances. And it was interesting to see that there is a recognition in the majority that something would have to replace that. There will be different opinions around precisely what and what should be done with the revenue, etc. You know, whether hypothecation, that's another whole question, whether it should go on, you know, improving public transport or improving roads for essentially building new roads and building on the road network or making a more efficient use of that network. But there will be different opinions around what's done. But I think this is why I come back full circle to my central message, which is we have to do something now, because precisely as you say, politically it has been a no-no. But I think what's changed, however, I say this cautiously, because like you, both of us, Leon, been around the block a few times, you don't read too much into surveys where you hear such and such percentage would be happily pay for, you know, for climate change, whatever. But there are some interesting observations one could make, though, about where the public are right now. So I think it's interesting that, well, there was an Ipsos Mori poll not that long ago, I think it was December, that actually suggested that I think 6 in 10 Britons would be supporting a change, essentially paying to drive around the town, if that was reducing traffic and congestion, improving the local environment. Now, interestingly, though, that same poll in 2007 got a very different result. It didn't help in the Manchester referendum at the time, because I think they were trying to sort of build the case for hypothecation. But, you know, but maybe there's been a shift. See, that's interesting that maybe. I think the air quality agenda is a very interesting one. What's been achieved with ULEZ in London, you know, sort of Mums for Lungs, all the different groups that have got behind the ULEZ, I think that shows there is appetite to change, particularly if you can link it to health. And, you know, there is a growing concern around the environment. I am very cautious about reading too much, as I said, into whether people will really change their behaviour yet. for sort of those climate reasons. However, there are surveys that are increasingly showing that there's a shift in feeling. I think what it does is it opens up, you still have to make the case that this is going to be fair, equitable, it won't cost you any more. You know, you're not going to be penalized. This is not about penalizing motorists, to use the jargon. You still got to make all of those arguments. But I think we are sort of beginning to live in a different world where those sorts of conversations become possible. And clearly we can build on the pandemic. I mean, what you're right, you're absolutely right, that the terrible thing is the awful thing is that we are in danger of seeing a car-led recovery. At the same time, and partly because of the avoid public transport message, and it's great that there are campaigns out there, giving a plug to Campaign for Better Transport at the moment with its campaign, brilliant, let's change that message, let's get people back onto public transport. So there is that immediate thing we have to get over, but also during the pandemic, people learnt there's a different way, there was much more walking and cycling, and that hopefully those changes will be locked in. People experience the benefit of cleaner air. So, and also what we learned through the pandemic is it is possible to change. I mean, so how can we draw on what we've learned through the pandemic and apply that to road user charging, to changing, making a long-term change in how we pay for road use to get to that fairer, more equitable system?
I mean, I'm sure you're right, because it is bandied about as a penalty. And it's not really a penalty, is it? It's pay as you go. But I think the trouble in the human psyche is that the VED, and indeed your annual insurance for your vehicle, and indeed the cost of the vehicle, in your mind is an unavoidable cost. So you just pay that. So from that moment onwards, your only real motoring cost is fuel. Now, of course, that's an entirely illogical position, but actually everything about humans and cars is totally illogical, because why would you buy a rapidly depreciating asset, park it for 22 hours a day and use it for two? I mean, it is the most illogical choice that humans make. They make other very good logical choices. They make them in supermarkets, and they make them when they buy their homes. But for goodness sake, they want a rapidly depreciating asset to use 2 hours a day. And so therefore, it is very hard to get into this idea. There is just something, I think, about seeing that meter spinning round, same as you do in a taxi. You know, they're thinking, yes, is this going to be a £20 journey, a £25 journey, a £30 journey? You know, your mind is attuned to it. And that's because to some extent you discount the VED and you discount the insurance and you discount all the other fixed costs. But I can't help feeling two things. One is that young people think about this differently. And thank goodness young people don't have the car owning compulsiveness that people of our age and others have, which is amazing. So the young people feel differently about it. The young people feel stronger about climate change. So I think that's really very good news. And I think the other thing that we know, which I hope helps us a bit, is that the recent politics has taught us that the public quite likes politicians who are brave. And Ken was brave when he brought in congestion charging in London in 2003. And we've seen quite recently, haven't we, quite unusual political reaction as a result of what people perceive to some extent as politicians doing something fairly decisive, whilst at the same time picking up some of the downside and some of the political damage that comes with it. So I wonder whether our new Metro mayors, all newly elected, some for a second term, now feel emboldened to get on with this, and that road user charging is now not the dirty word that it was. And I wonder whether, like you're doing, is to make sure there are some tailor-made solutions in their hands for them to discuss, rather than it just being nebulous for too long. Because some of these Metro mayors are only in for 3 years, and before we know where we are, we'll be on the cusp of the next mayoral election. And you and I will know from our history that some of those people who've been brave also got voted out. But I think the time is now. We're at the beginning of a period of office. The government's got quite a while to run. A pandemic, hopefully clearing itself away. And it's time, isn't it, to do something before the consequences of a car-led recovery on the old system just leaves us in a terrible place.
Absolutely. I mean, you've said so many things there, Leon, that I really, really endorse and agree with and would just love to comment on. I mean, one of the points you just raised at the start there around the kind of running cost versus the capital cost. You've the VED, how we're currently paying for VED, if we would recommend abolishing that and replacing with this new road user charge that absolutely reflects the time of day, the meter that you describe. So that's one of the big problems with VED, that you pay it and then it doesn't, and in actual fact, if you look at different types of road pricing systems, what you don't want is a flat rate that you pay it, because then you're almost like, I've paid my congestion charge now, I better drive as much as possible to get the benefit from it. So that doesn't really work either. So anything that kind of moves to reflecting the actual time of day. I mean, on the question around sort of where the young people and, where people are, whether there's a difference, sort of moving from this sort of ownership to usership, I think is kind of a really interesting thing to really build on. And we see very much the sharing economy, where we go with lift share and all different sort of sharing, I think is an interesting thing to watch as well. But there's definitely a shift. How much we can build into that, I don't know. But again, that's a sort of a positive sign. On the politics, I think it's really interesting that you're right. Again, we're speculating, but people do like to see decisive action in the public interest. And if the argument can be sufficiently made just to the extent to which this is in the public interest and decisive action taken, I would hope that again, we could build again on what we've learned through the pandemic, was where there's been decisive action, wherever, however politically difficult it might have perceived to be. One thing I would say around the metro mayors versus central government, as we've seen from Manchester referendum, Edinburgh, as we see in the clean air zones, the local authorities having to carry the can for the difficult decisions, I do really believe that this is not a kind of a decision that should be passed down locally. I feel the politics don't get any easier locally. Now, it maybe can be built into a clean air zone, and that there are schemes that can be built on that basis, and that's very much to be encouraged. But I think the big question that we have to solve, how do we replace fuel duty and VED? I think that has to be something that comes from a national initiative, perhaps with a pilot initially. But I do believe that you almost need, it is such an imperative for finance, for climate change, for congestion, for equity, for all the different reasons. It kind of needs to have some kind of big push, I think, from the centre.
Claire, I think you further suggested that it ought to be possible to move all of this out of politics altogether, and that some non-political organisation...
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the same way, frankly, that investment decisions with our utilities for telecoms and energy, yeah, and so on. So that's not on the government's level of responsibility. It's in the hands, in that particular case, of a regulator. So yeah, you were suggesting, I think, that this sort of charging also ought to be the responsibility of a regulator.
Absolutely. I think we've got to take, I mean, in the same way, we've taken the politics out of interest rates. That's delegated to the Bank of England. You almost need to see it like that. Let's take the politics out of road taxation and have a body such as the ORR in consultation with the OBR to basically, its remit to set all of the road taxation and to the arbiter, but absolutely divorced from politics. And I think to almost the stage before that is perhaps to get a cross-party commission. This needs to be cross-party. I think another interesting model from transport is the National Infrastructure Commission. That's absolutely support the National Infrastructure Commission in its work, what it does. I think that was, again, a similar example of, taking a longer term view, getting away from the electoral cycle, and building support across. So I think, but yes, so having a regulator that kind of is at arm's length, it absolutely is divorced from politics, I think is one of the foundations. You kind of don't want anybody to be, who's in number 10, to be punished for this. I mean, anybody who, you need to make it as possible, as possible, as easy as possible to do it, as politically possible as can be achieved.
So what's really wanted is for the best brains in the world to come up with a mechanism and a formula. And that's a formula that will stand the test of time. Because then, as time progresses, the formula will be applied and it will have various triggers. It will deal with different sizes and weights. It'll take into account everything from inflation to the investment in the road network. And so that actually each year, a bit like the rail fares number, well, nobody much likes the idea that the fares are going up, but the number is the number because it's based on the RPI at a point in the previous year. And whilst people might complain about it, there's no political argument. It's not in the Chancellor's budget statement. It is a mechanism by which it changes. And the other one that I never forget is that each year when I was in TfL, I would take to the board the annual increase in black cab rates. And I said, you have a choice. You know, you've got your responsibility to the black cab trade to make sure that they can earn enough money to live. You also have a responsibility to the users to make sure that the fares are affordable and attractive. Or you could follow the formula that was put in place in 1981. And guess what? Every year they took the 1981 formula because nobody dared move away from a formula that had been around so long that whether or not it was perfect didn't matter. The fact is it was consistent over a long period of time. The ebbs and flows, the good news and bad news washed itself out. And in due course, it found itself back to where it was. And that's where we want to be with this, shouldn't we? That's right. Over the longest possible time, we want this to deliver enough money to invest in the infrastructure. We want it to pay for all of the costs of administering the system. We want it to be having quite a downward pressure on useless journeys and quite some upward pressure on people thinking about the times and reasons for their journeys. In the same way, if I may say so, people have learned to do this with their smart meter as far as their own energy consumption is concerned. And so people just then start to work the system a bit. And if they're going to contribute to either pollution or congestion or both, then at least they're making the lowest contribution to it that they can, and they are paying a reasonable share for it. And if we could crack that, then the problem is solved.
Yes, and I think there's an important point which I don't think we've touched on just yet, which I think in part of the implementation of this. We talked at the start about giving people plenty of notice. You know, you don't want to jump, you know, oppose. I think what we want to create is something that people would be incentivized to opt into ahead of it becoming mandatory. Hence, you know, and then building some critical mass. So, and in fact, so the, in our proposal, that's precisely what we would recommend, that from by 2030, might slip to 2035, but initially we would say from 2030, this new way of paying for road use becomes mandatory. But in the meantime, there are all sorts of ways in which people are going to be incentivized to opt in. And I think that's very important. The role of this ORR / OBR body could be, so in that opting in period where you're incentivizing people to change, one of the proposals we might expect from this new body that's in charge of motoring taxation is, say, a 10-year trajectory on increases in fuel duty, which would encourage people to opt in to this new way of paying for road use, clearly, and to switch to more sustainable modes, and in itself would make the case for the new road user charge. But I think the more people can be kind of co-opted into opting in and encouraged and be feel part of this. So this is going to save you money. If you think about this, make this change and you will be ahead of the game. I think that's an important element is giving people that choice.
So that's interesting. So what you're suggesting there, in fact, is not only would there be a series of incentives, maybe for buying zero emission vehicle, scrappage or whatever, but in fact, the two systems could coexist side by side and the individual could choose which system they're in. And as a result of moves that could be made fiscally, you would push harder on the VED and the fuel duty elements of it, so that people quickly came to the conclusion they'd be better off on the pay-as-you-go model than they would be on the big lump sum model.
That's correct.
So in fact, it wouldn't be compulsory. You could as some people, some awkward people are like to do, which is they'll stick out until the last, you know, I'm the last person who's going to move from this system. But there does come a point in everybody's mind when they say, well, hang on a second, VED is £1,200 a year, fuel duty is 50%. I'm giving up on this. I'm going to go on the pay-as-you-go model because it suits. Yeah. So I think that could be very interesting because that means that people could migrate from the old clumsy system to the new flexible system quite quickly. Yeah. And my guess is that people would make that move quickly in the way that they make the move forward. And in the same way they've done, frankly, with their energy, the same way they've done with their telecoms, the way in which young people rent rather than buy. You know, people move to the new way of doing things quite quickly.
Absolutely. When they see that it's in their interest and they can see that price is only going that way, it's only going up. Mm-hmm. I think the other really important element in terms of incentivizing. So the question is, you know, how do we get there's a really important nut to crack here, which is how do we move to a system where buyers of EVs understand that they are going to have to pay for road use, right? So at the moment, and this is why it's so important that we do something now, because this window of opportunity is going to diminish fast the more and more EVs, because people are buying, they're assuming that their low running costs is what they're paying.
Only 0.5% of the vehicles are EV. So at the moment, it's a small group of people, but in a year's time, it's going to be a bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. It's growing fast. Now, an eye-watering sum it may be, but one of the things that we would recommend is massively increasing the grants for EVs. Now, this is important for two reasons. One, to make them more accessible. At the moment, what you've got with the EV grants is a system that really is favouring middle-class households. Who can afford to buy a new car? We rapidly need to develop a second-hand car market as well. And these grants that we would be recommending would apply to both new and secondhand cars. But if, say, for example, just for argument's sake, a third off the price of an EV, you know, essentially a covering, but on the condition that you commit that vehicle to the new this road user charge.
Yes.
So and then that vehicle is then on the roads paying that charge for the rest of its life.
So this is a one-way ratchet. You only get the grants if you sign up to the new way of working.
If you want
the grant, you have to sign up to the new way of working. You can't play both ends against the middle there.
No. And then you said, but the point is, if there's been leadership, political leadership at the start, and people know that from whenever it is, say 2030, this is going to be mandatory for everyone, then why wouldn't you just quickly get with the program? It would make complete sense for someone buying. And I think that this is, again, where getting the sums right, getting that external body, judging the different bands and what's allowable and how that applies in secondhand, all of that detail needs to be worked through forensically, clearly. But getting that, when you get that right, you create a system where it is actually in someone's interest to buy the EV, get that grant, and pay for road use. And then the message to the Treasury is, you know, you're investing in a revenue stream. You know, you are investing in a future revenue stream. This grant, which is a little eye-watering compared to the one that's just been cut. You know, if anything, the grant's been going the other way. But first of all, it's making it accessible to all households. And we have to, by the way, something massively has to be done on infrastructure for charging, because that's another big issue, clearly, that needs to be dealt with. And I think a lot of the, you know, that a part of this whole piece needs to be making it possible for people who rented accommodation, you know, at the moment, and finding it very difficult to charge. But, you know, so what you're saying is, look, here is an opportunity. What's not to like? You know, you're essentially moving. Basically, this new way, this is the future. This is the way it's going. Get in there early. And the vehicle, you know, I'm sorry, I can go on, but I mean, there's probably all sorts of reasons why there's probably all sorts of devil's advocate questions here, actually. But at the moment, when you look at it, it just seems to be so obvious that, because how do we incentivize the switch to a new way of paying produce without disincentivizing take up of EVs?
And that is the cornerstone of the dilemma facing the government. It wants a rapid move to net zero, but it doesn't want such a rapid move as that it collapses its income and at the same time increases congestion. That's absolutely the case. Claire, thank you very much indeed. And my guest has been Claire Haig, who is Chief Executive of Greener Transport Solutions, but who has spent most of her life campaigning for greener transport in the widest sense. And it's been fabulous to have her on this show to talk about road pricing in particular and the dilemma that's facing government. It will be really interesting to see how this develops in the future. So Claire, thank you so much for coming on the programme. This has been Lunch with Leon. This is an ITTHub.net production. If you've enjoyed it, please go across to our website, ITTHub.net. You can see details of this and other podcasts, also our news channel, and everything you need to know about the exciting ITT Hub event. In the meantime, a big thank you to my guest, Claire, and look forward to seeing you again soon.